Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
And welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better. And welcome to part two of this week's Clash as Van Damme and Lundgren face off against Stallone and Snipes. It's Universal Soldier versus Demolition Man. On Monday's episode, we went on an explosive chase across the desert with added buttocks and ear necklaces in Universal Soldier, which means on this ep, we're back in that era of 90s action cinema where giving your leads the most ridiculous names possible was the order of the day. So say hello to John Spartan and Simon Phoenix, two relics from the past that thawed out in 2032 to do battle in a world where everything deemed unpleasant has been outlawed. What happens when fish-out-of-water comedy meets sci-fi action romp meets Sylvester Stallone from 1993? It's Demolition Man. So who will be crowned the winner at the end of this episode? Universal Soldier or Demolition Man? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Potters. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilly.
And it is part two of this week's face-off. We did Universal Soldier. We are now doing Demolition Man. Chris, remind us of the connection between these two movies.
I can. The connection is it takes a frozen maniac to catch a frozen maniac.
A great line in this movie. Yeah, brilliant. Well, I'm excited about this one. I was excited when I heard you'd picked it this week. A little upset that I went through Universal Soldier on Monday and Vicky gets the pleasure of going through Demolition Man. But yeah, Chris, do you want to take us away? Ask us some questions about this glorious experience that is Demolition Man?
Sure. I mean, we normally kick off with the synopsis.
Yeah. I've actually written something, so shall I just get on with that and then Alex can catch up later? Yeah,
do it.
Shut up. I was looking at my notes. I'm sorry, Vicky, please take us through the synopsis.
Yeah, honestly, so rude. I spend such a long time on these things now. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna start now, so shush. Okay. Welcome to the brave new world / increasingly familiar world of San Angeles, where people avoid physical contact and love video conferencing. Sylvester Stallone plays John Spartan, sentenced to cryo-freezing in 1996 and defrosted in 2032, to find that everything is brilliant as long as you don't like spicy food, leaky sex and abortions. And uh-oh, here's 90s villain Wesley Snipes, aka Simon Phoenix, wreaking vintage havoc on this peaceful city in his quest to kill resistance leader Edgar Friendly, who advocates for freedom of choice with a side of barbecue ribs and cigars. Sandra Bullock is the 90s fetishizing modern police officer in need of an old-fashioned cop to catch an old-fashioned crook, and hilarity ensues. Or it tries to, but Sylvester Stallone didn't get that particular memo slash pager alert slash AOL chat room notice or whatever, with very curious results. Final word, knitting.
What?
There's a bit in it about knitting, which I still don't get. I've seen it twice. Yeah. And I don't get it.
I honestly thought you went, "Your ting."
That's what I thought you said. I thought you said, "Your ting." I thought it was like Bo Selector.
Your ting. What a brilliant catchphrase.
I was like, did you had a very different 90s to me. I mean, we had Schwing from Wayne's World, but we never had your ting.
Wouldn't it be cute if that's like, I just misunderstood it at the time and I've been saying your ting for 20 years.
But you, so you didn't...
what's up, your ting?
You didn't understand the knitting thing.
No. Again, I didn't understand the knitting thing.
Why don't... I mean, we'll come to it, but yeah. It's because that was what he was told to do to, like, become a better person. Like, they give you a task to perform that alters your behaviour and stops you destroying, demolishing everything.
I mean, it's a nitpicky point, but he bangs on about not being a seamstress.
Chris? Nitpicky? Nitpicky?
But seamstresses don't knit. You think? Do you know what I mean? Very confusing.
In the year 2032.
This morning, Simon Phoenix escaped from this cryo facility. We are, quite frankly, not equipped to deal with the situation.
Amidst a world of peace and calm.
We're police officers. We're not trained for this kind of violence.
How was the fiendish Simon Phoenix apprehended back in the 20th?
In the end, it took just one man. John Spartan.
You mean the Demolition Man?
The conditions of your parole are full reinstatement into the SAPD and immediate assignment to the apprehension of Simon Phoenix.
Two mortal enemies.
Just dropped in and say hi!
From another time.
Pass is over, John! Time for something new and improved!
Oh, hell.
Will be unleashed on a future that isn't big enough for the both of them. Sylvester Stallone. Wesley Snipes. Demolition Man.
As I've mentioned, this is the second time I've seen this film, and I want to resurrect a phrase that Chris used the other week because I think it's brilliant, but this is a crackers film. This film is fucking bonkers. I'd only remembered the sex scene, such as it is, and I'd forgotten how much Sylvester Stallone is in a very different film to everybody else. And just thank God for Sandra Bullock. Like, I'd had a few drinks when I watched this. I thought I was fucking tripping my face off. I didn't have a clue what was happening a lot of the time. How many times have you seen this film?
That's not just because you were drunk. Massive parts of this film make absolutely no sense to the extremes that characters go and do one thing and then appear in other scenes having not done the thing that they said they were going to do. It's like it's put together by a madman.
It's bonkers. How many times have you seen it, Chris?
A couple of times, I would say, before this go around. But the first time is quite vivid. My dad was doing business in New York and we went out there for half term in October 1993. Wow. And I remember
you're
really...
so Donatart sometimes. You are so like Ivy League. Like, you really are. You fancy. You are.
And I remember really vividly one evening convincing my parents to let us go and see two films at the cinema because... I convinced them that my brother wanted to see one and I wanted to see the other, when really it was me wanted to see them both. And so we did a double bill of A Bronx Tale, Robert De Niro's directorial debut, and this film. And I remember this so vividly, how crazy the New York audience went for the movie, and especially every time Wesley Snipes takes the piss out of New Yorkers in it, which happens a couple of times. So it was a really fun, raucous atmosphere in that theater that night, and it's just stuck with me. It's a crowd pleaser.
So it's a weird one, isn't it? I've watched films. When you watch a movie in America, and a lot of filmmakers talk about this when they watch a movie for the first time with an audience here in the UK at a premiere compared to when they do it in America, and just how vocal a US audience is. Like a cinema going experience in America is an entirely different thing to in the UK. And it's not even if it's a full cinema. What did I go and see? I went to see, oh gosh, I can't remember, some movie like in the middle of the day that I had to see for work. And it was a sparsely filled cinema. And the few people that were still there, it wasn't about being a part of a big crowd. They were still like, shut up at the screen. No way. Hey, don't look behind you, man. It's like, what on earth is this?
I think someone once told them that they're part of the show. They're part of the entertainment. And so they join in. But yeah, it is a more, there's more audience participation, isn't there? It seems when you watch a movie in the States.
Yeah. You mentioned on the last episode, I think, Chris, about Sylvester Stallone saying that he's got plans for a Demolition Man sequel. I had a look at this because I'm very interested to know whether he's going to do this, because I'm a huge Demolition Man fan. And he has said on an Instagram Q&A, yes, it's in the works. We're working on it right now with Warner Brothers, and it's looking fantastic. So that should come out. That's going to happen. Now, for anyone getting too excited, though, Sylvester Stallone has, in various forms of media, also committed to an Expendables 4, a Rocky 7, a Cobra sequel, a Cliffhanger 2, and a Tango and Cash 2. So there's a long list of maybes there.
And I don't want to spoil where we're going with this conversation, but the screenwriter, Daniel Waters, has said that Joel Silver once told him that he's got an idea for a sequel in which Meryl Streep plays Sylvester Stallone's daughter.
I read that. Oh, that sounded brilliant.
Yeah, I'm not down with that. I don't know what Meryl would have to say about it.
Well, actually, let's go back to Daniel Waters because, so the way that this, I mean, you might have other things to add. I imagine you will. He said that the way that this film actually started was, if you imagine, there's a place called City Walk at Universal Studios, which is like a massive indoor, like shopping mall, leisure complex, kind like a very sanitized space. And the thought was like, what if all of LA was like that? But there is a Hungarian writer whose name I don't know how to pronounce, so I'm just going to have a bash at it. And I think it's István Nemere, who claims that the film more or less totally plagiarizes his book, which is called Fight of the Dead, which I haven't read, so I can't.
But it's a much better name, isn't it? I think it's actually Battle. I wrote it down as Battle of the Dead. But yeah, I mean, same thing. It's a great name.
Yeah, it is. Well, this is the thing, because the Demolition Man, isn't that just because of the song? It's not. It doesn't really make that much sense. Like, so there's that awful song, that Sting song, and Sandra Bullock
fucking terrible.
It's awful. And she's forced to like say to Sylvester Stallone, you keep demolishing things, which I suppose he does, but to the point where it's like a nickname, I don't see that. Whatever. And then you've got it. Go on.
No, I just that writer thing. It gets really just honestly. There's a film in there or a TV series anyway. Because what that writer, that Hungarian writer, talks about, he says that what happened was after the Iron Curtain fell, a lot of people in Eastern Europe started taking ideas from Eastern European literature that hadn't made it to the West and selling them to Hollywood, because Hollywood was simultaneously going, well, there's a whole new resource of ideas for books, because far be it from us to come up with an idea ourselves. So let's steal that. And people were selling Hollywood these ideas, and someone sold his idea to Hollywood for Demolition Man, sold them basically the idea of this book without consulting him. And he says, Game for 10 Billion was another of his books that Deep Impact is pretty much identical to. So this was a real thing that was going on, where suddenly there was this resource of ideas that had opened up to Hollywood after the Iron Curtain fell in the early 90s, late 80s.
Oh, That's genuinely interesting. I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it? Because of the sort of the libertarian messaging and the anti-fascism and that makes a lot of sense. And then you've got a young director who was 28 at the time called Marco Brambilla. And he says that David Fincher recommended him to Joel Silver for this job. And so he now is I don't know if he was at the time, but he is now a very well-respected artist. And he was sort of seduced by the idea of using his skills on a huge Hollywood scale to make Demolition Man. And I think it was the first and last time he did that because he didn't have so much fun.
He made one other movie, and then he's a visual artist based in New York now. But if you look at his Wikipedia, it feels like he's tried to almost scrub this from his history. Like it's a really tiny footnote at the bottom of his page. When this is kind of a big deal, directing a movie this big.
Yeah, at 28, it's crazy.
The quote is, a journalist asked him the question, are you the only person to ever direct a film with Sylvester Stallone and have artwork in the Guggenheim? I think that's a hard yes. But he got the job because he says David Fincher actually got him this job because they were friends.
It's okay. It's not like you say. It's good to know someone's listening when you're telling a story. That's your line. So carry
hoisted
on.
By my own facade.
Hold on. I've got written down here. I've got an anecdote about.
Fuck off,
David
Chris. I know what you're about to say.
David Fincher anecdote I've got here. If anyone's interested.
Do you want to hear it?
It's terrific.
Oh God. So anyway, apparently he got the movie because David Fincher... let's run it into the ground so it's all forgotten. Carry on, Victoria.
No, I tell you what, why fucking bother? why don't you say what you want to say, and then if I've got anything to add, I will add it later. I'm not cross. Okay, if you've got anything else to say about David Fincher, let me know. But if not, can we talk about casting? Can we move on?
I'm just literally through my David Fincher notes, making sure covered. No, that was everything. It was really that David Fincher got in the film. That was the main point I was really wanted to put out there.
I think people know now. I think they've got that. So I did read, might not be true, old JCVD was going to be in it with Steven Seagal, but that didn't happen. And at one point, it was going to be Jackie Chan as the villain, Simon Phoenix, and that eventually goes to Wesley Snipes. And Sandra Bullock, who plays Lenina Huxley, thank you, Brave New World, was going to be played by Laurie Pettit, who I love in A League of Their Own, and they recast that after filming started, so I don't know what happened. Maybe you do.
All I could find was creative differences is what sort of quoted everywhere, which means nothing, does it?
Yeah. I did want to just jump in at this point. There was a Hungarian writer. I don't actually know how to pronounce his name, but I'm going to give it a shot here.
One final fact, which you probably already know, so I don't see what the point is. Your favourite woman, Adrienne Barbeau. She's in it. She's the computer's voice. Again, being the voice of a computer. So good for her.
That's so weird. I know. She was the chess set. She was the chess set when we did the thing.
Yeah.
What a niche. Yeah. We've got a computer. Who can do that? Well, and Adrienne Barbeau. Adrienne Barbeau can. Well, anyone could really. Get me Adrienne Barbeau.
She's also the voice of Stephen Hawking, little known fact.
Are you telling the truth?
Yeah, no, that's her voice.
Shut up. Are you telling the truth?
No.
I just wanted to know, before we sort of crack on, Laurie Petty was actually cast.
Is this how you earn forgiveness? Is that how you do it?
What?
You just make something so ridiculous that I can't be mad about it.
But do you forgive me?
I guess. Okay, all right, here we go. Let's talk about this film. Are you ready? Yeah. So what we've got is the LA riots, and they just don't stop. So Sylvester Stallone and Wesley Snipes are enemies, and because of a falling out involving some hostage situation, which they both fuck up. So Sylvester Stallone is a police officer. Wesley Snipes is a criminal. Sylvester Stallone's gung-ho demolition man attitude means that Wesley Snipes' hostages get killed. They both get cryo-frozen as a punishment or something. And then pow, it's 2032. Here's Sandra Bullock. She's got 90s eyebrows and she's a 90s fetishist. She's got Lethal Weapon posters, Red Hot Chili Peppers posters, but there's no crime. And she hates that, weirdly. And she wants a bit of 90s action.
That off, it's so weird, the stuff they've got assembled in that office to show her love for the 20th century. Because they've got a Lethal Weapon 3 poster. You're like, all right, cool.
Well, no, because I had a Lethal Weapon 3 poster in 1992, but I would not have it now, looking back on that decade. They got that wrong. You'd have Lethal Weapon 1, wouldn't you? You wouldn't have bloody 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have Lethal Weapon 1. Blood Sugar Sex Magik, though, that's a great album. You can have a poster of that. I don't quite know what a samurai sword, how that celebrates the 20th century. Just a sword from feudal Japan, which was not in the 20th century. Or a jack-in-the-box snake, famous 20th century toy, or a toy fire engine. And when people look back at the 20th century, people aren't going to go, oh, I remember those toy fire engines.
Do you remember fires? I got a bit obsessed with, like, because it's just passed off as like, oh, she's just obsessed with the 90s, and no one questions it or says, well, what, like, why? Like, why? As a police officer, what's the thrill? And I went down a weird Google research hole of what it would be the equivalent now. So like, what would a police officer being obsessed with, like, crime from the 1860s or the 1870s? So then I looked up, like, what was a very popular crime back then? And would you like to know what I found out? it was known that people would sell body parts to use as dripping, as cooking fat.
Wait, what? What are you talking about? So like, sorry, what period are you talking about?
Like 1860s.
Why are you talking about? Why are you talking about 1860s?
Oh, are you not listening either?
It doesn't make any sense. It's got no relevance.
I got you back here, V. Let me make it up to you. Let me make up the David Fincher debacle from earlier. It's because if 2032 and Sandra Bullock's obsessed with the 1990s.
Yes.
If in this era.
Yes.
Oh, no, no, Chris is right.
Exactly. You'd go back about 40 years, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but that's too. That's not funny. You see, that's where you. That's where you always fall down. You value realism over what you do. You know you do. Yeah.
All right, it's bring the funny then. Bring the funny. Come on, Vicky.
It's too late. You've ruined everything.
I'm interested to know a couple of things that we sort of skipped over. First of all, John Spartan being cryogenically frozen. He gets this 70 years in a cryo penitentiary. Seemingly based on the fact that these bodies are dead, and everyone's going, the bodies are dead, and Wesley Snipes goes, see that, Captain? I told him, and he said he didn't care. Yeah. And the statement from the known murderer, Simon Phoenix, is pretty much enough for his boss, who goes, well, there you go. He said it, so you're going to prison for 70 years.
The statement from the psychopath who's dressed as a leather clown.
the coked up psychopath. He's having a great time when Sylvester Stallone turns up. He's like, be with you in a minute, John.
It was the 90s.
Oh, yeah. But then we didn't even talk about literally watching a lubed up Stallone rolling around in a Perspex cylinder.
Oh, yeah.
You can't miss out that, because I swear at one point, and I did watch it three times, you can see his penis pressed up against the Perspex.
I mean, I thought that was a risk. Yeah, I mean, it must have happened on set a lot, but I didn't rewind it to check.
Oh, well, I did, and it's there. So, you know, I just wanted to complete the Holy Trinity. I've got Bruce Willis in The Colour of Night, Sylvester Stallone in Demolition Man. Once I get Arnie, I've got the entire planet Hollywood investors.
Sorry. clever. Oh dear. Anyway, so Wesley Snipes is defrosted. I can't remember why. And then Sandra Bullock, all the police officers are basically useless in 2032 and soft and don't know what to do. So Sandra has the great idea of, as Chris has said, you need a frozen cop to catch a frozen crook. So let's defrost John Spartan.
You need a maverick who doesn't play by the rules, don't you?
You do. You always do, actually.
She's got a weird arc, doesn't she? Because at the start, because like there's no crime anymore, but she literally is longing for chaos. I think someone actually says to her at one point, "What, you want chaos and crime?" She's like, "Yep, that I do." It's like, that's weird. Yeah. That's a really weird thing to long for.
And you think, given that something as mundane as uneducational toys are illegal, you think that expressing a desire for crime, that would probably get you put in prison? But anyway.
She makes it clear that there's a connection between violence and sex, and it clearly makes her horny later in the film. So maybe she's just a horn dog.
Yeah, fair enough. It's a strange thing. We'll get to that. That's an odd one.
The one thing that hasn't progressed in the future that they don't have as a goal is efficiency. Because they've replaced murder with murder, death, kill.
Oh, yeah.
Which seems like too many words to say one thing. Especially if someone's being murdered, you're in a bit of a rush. So going, oh, we've got another murder, death, kill. It's just murder. We'll be fine. You can just say murder.
So this is where Huxley informs, that's Sandra Bullock, John Spartan, that anything not good for you is illegal. So this is where the film, this is where it's become quite legendary about... talking about the things that people find interesting in their life, or makes life worth living, or makes you feel dangerous and alive. And also then you sort of bleed over into the libertarian argument about freedom of choice and freedom of speech and the nanny state and all the rest of it. I wonder what you two think about that. What do you think about the interference of the state, the body politic versus the body personal? What are your thoughts?
I think it's really interesting that this future is like a weird combination of liberalism and fascism.
Yeah.
As you say, someone literally says things don't happen anymore. We've taken care of that. And you might think in your head, oh, maybe I would accept these rules for a crime-free world, which is essentially what they've got. But they also examine the other side of that, where people are depressed. And they're literally having to... speak to have booths give them positive affirmation during the day just to keep them going because of how this is having an effect on their mental health, the fact that nothing happens.
Yeah, but you could make an argument that that's Instagram now and people are already depressed and there's loads of crime. So I don't know. Maybe
I wrote down it's like selfies. It's like putting a selfie up and expecting, you know, people to like it and feeling bad when they don't.
I think
it's really interesting.
Yeah, but also I do think it's meant to be a comedy, and you know, you've got the way that the characters talk is meant to be funny, but Sylvester Stallone isn't reacting in any way that helps you laugh with like the absurd situation. So it is a clash between a liberal society and a fascist society. But you're meant to think it's funny and amusingly confusing, and you're just not allowed to because it's just what's he doing. Although, what I should say is, I'm only talking about this because I would like to get to the three seashells, because I think that's very important.
Just before we jump onto what is a truly fascinating question, Daniel Waters, the writer, does sort of talk about how a lot of people send him links and stuff to, as he puts it, die-hard, charitably libertarian guys who used Demolition Man as the greatest thesis statement of the 90s because of how it's talking about the world gone politically correct and how awful that is, and they should be allowed to say what they want and do what they want. And he doesn't like that. He's quite against the idea of the right wing using it as some kind of a soothsaying movie about what the future is going to be if the left win.
So three seashells, everyone. They don't one of the funniest lines in the whole film is when Sandra Bullock is like laughing about John Spartan's sort of Philistine practices to say that we used to use like wadded up paper in the bathroom, and she thinks that's hilarious, and everyone thinks that's hilarious. And it is quite funny if you think about it objectively, that that's the best we can do. And I do like the fact that so now they use three seashells, and Sylvester Stallone can't believe that. And it's never explained as to how you would do that, which is a good idea, because obviously it's pretty gross once you get into it. But also it's given the film maybe arguably more of a lease of life, because people still want to know what the fuck you do with three seashells.
Do you? Did anyone at least try and have a guess at what it might be? I did, and it's horrible. I mean, it involves scraping and scooping and wiping and like, but mainly scraping and scooping. Chris?
It doesn't mean anything. I mean, he made it up. He wanted to come up with something that sounded vaguely weird and futuristic. He's gone on record as saying that. He said that it helped him get out of jury duty once, though. because when he was on jury duty, a bailiff said that he'd figured it out. Said you use one seashell to pinch apart your bottom and the other seashell to pull out the excrement. And then the third seashell has a hose that washes off the remains. And Daniel Waters said, if that gets me off jury duty, you're right. So.
A seashell with a hose? What?
Well, this is what I came to.
Like a conch.
The only thing I can think is that underneath each one is a hose, one is a dryer, one is some talc or something. Not that you touch. I don't talk my bottom. I freeze the toilet, by the way. But it's got to be like, there's got to be something under there, like they're just a lid on something. There's no way of doing it otherwise.
So anyway, we need to get Wesley Snipes and Sylvester Stallone in a scene together because they...
he's been absent for 34 minutes. Sylvester yeah. Stallone, and like, you see him at the start and he's gone for 34 minutes and it's just Wesley Snipes doing like roundhouse kicks to weird record scratchers and sound effects. It's just odd.
Yeah.
And you just wait for Sylvester Stallone to get back. And it is good, that scene after he's told about the three seashells. And he does stand next to the machine that issues tickets if you swear. And he just goes, fuck.
Oh, that's
Ethel.
Good. Yeah, yeah.
And it prints out loads of paper. And then he goes, here, I'm going to go to the toilet now.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Like,
yeah, except, ouch, paper cuts. I did think about that.
I mean, I did lose the thread of it a bit here again, apart from, so Wesley Snipes needs to get a gun. You can only get a gun from a museum. But they're all fully loaded and ready to go in this museum. But the best bit, and this is cool, is underneath, sort of, there's like a see-through floor in the museum, and they've got like a what would be a vintage street scene of the 90s. And so we'll come back to that for a fight later. But that's such a fun idea, like a cool idea that Wesley Snipes and Sylvester Stallone, they're foreshadowing the fact they will be able to have a fight in familiar territory, even though it's like a historical artifact by that time.
It's like if some Vikings were unfrozen and had a fight at the Jorvik Viking Centre.
Yeah, it is. That's brilliant. Yeah. I'd love to see that. Then there's some fighting somewhere, something about Nigel Hawthorne, which I kind of missed. And really,
when this film tries to do anything but a series of gags and fights, it's you go, what?
What?
He's going to kill Dennis Leary because the system he's built, he already hates. He doesn't think it's strict enough.
Yeah.
So
it doesn't make any sense. He's like, I want, with Edgar Friendly, Dennis Leary dead, I'll have carte blanche to create the perfect society. But it's like, but you did that already. And also, just shoot him. Just shoot him. What? You don't need to get Wesley Snipes to shoot him in the head. You can shoot him in the head. It was only 40 years ago. I don't know. It just seems a bit convoluted, but whatever. It is convoluted. Who cares?
You've got. He's basically playing Sir Humphrey, isn't he, as well, from the Yes, Prime Minister series. Yeah. He's doing nothing different. And I, to be fair, I did like the fact that he was so clearly the villain that they didn't bother to try and pretend he's not, which you would normally get in these kind of films.
That's true.
It would be a twist, whereas with this, they were like, nah, we've cast a posh English guy. Everyone's going to know. let's just reveal it early doors.
But I would like to talk about the, inverted commas, the sex scene, because Sandra Bullock has never been better. Never been better in this. She pulls off that scene, so like it's basically single-handedly. So the conceit
she pulls off
is,
what, single-handedly?
Sorry. Oh, all right. So, has anyone got a cymbal crash for Chris? I haven't got anything. Anyway, the conceit is in 2032, people don't transfer fluids between each other, so you don't have sex with each other. So you put on a headset, you pop on a little headset, and then something happens. Now, there will be fluid somewhere, I hope, but it's not, it's the exchange.
She gives him a towel, doesn't she? Which is the grimmest part of the whole thing.
Oh, that's so sad. Oh, no. So it's a bit strange because even though Sandra loves everything about the 20th, as she sweetly calls it, she's absolutely appalled by the idea of having real sex with Sylvester Stallone, which I kind of understand, but not for those reasons. You think she'd be like firmly into it, but she's not.
Especially when sex in 2032 is fucking terrifying. He's like, sees these sort of day glow flashes of her going, in his eyes. I mean, I'd be like, what the hell is that? That's awful.
And also, everyone knows you keep your eyes closed the entire time, so you wouldn't see anything.
I mean, one bit of advice for Stallone here. She says, what are you doing when he goes to kiss her? And he says, breaking the law before trying to kiss her. Never say that. Never say that. Never admit wrongdoing in this situation. And speaking of this scene, Vicky, what was your favourite of Sylvester Stallone's descriptors for 20th century sex in this scene?
Can you... Oh, yeah, that's what I was just going to say.
What does he say? I can't remember.
He says, you've got your choice, Vicky. Chunker. You've got boning, the wild mumbo, or the hunker chunker.
My vote is with boning.
Yes, because no one's boning ever called it the other two things, ever.
I've never heard of that.
Outside of, I had to look them up because I don't have the street smarts that I used to. Hunker Chunker was made up for this movie, which makes you think you should have made up something better because Hunker Chunker, it sounds like
it sounds like vomiting.
Up,
it sounds like Haagen-Dazs ice cream.
Hunking up chunks,
doesn't it? Ben and Jerry's.
Well, no, I can't put those two together.
So anyway, and also he's wearing white socks, as I've mentioned on the previous episode, which is disgusting. So sex is off. Thank you very much. Then there's something about knitting, which I've mentioned before, which I didn't get. And we are building up to Sylvester Stallone meeting the resistance movement, which is it's a shit resistance movement because Edgar Friendly doesn't really seem to be that into it. They're just hungry. They're not actually, I've called them a resistance movement, but they're not really. Like, they're just trying to steal to survive.
When Stallone says you've got a few seconds to live, as if he's going to kill one of them, that's just an innocent person who wants food that he's trying to kill. So he's not very heroic in that scene.
No. But Edgar Friendly's very existence threatens the fabric of this society or something. And so Nigel Hawthorne goes to see Wesley Snipes. He's like, but you have to kill him. And then I think Nigel Hawthorne gets killed at this point. Although, like I say, a little bit drunk and I've forgotten. Yeah.
It's all a mess is what it is, because there's a point where Wesley Snipes is told by Nigel Hawthorne, go and kill Edgar Friendly, and he literally climbs into the sewers. You see him going to do that, and then you never see what happens in the sewers. The next thing is he's back threatening Nigel Hawthorne, but he's got some shoulder pads that he's found somewhere.
Oh, yeah, he's found a whole outfit from somewhere. Yeah,
he's down there with his gang, though, isn't he? He's putting together his gang there down in the tunnel.
That's later, though. No, because at that point, he hasn't told Nigel Hawthorne that he wants the gang. There's this whole earlier bit that just doesn't work,
right,
where he goes into the sewer and then he's back and then he goes back to the sewer.
I thought we'd moved away past that.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to highlight that because I'm a big stickler for details like that. And also, I've never seen the Pizza Hut version of this.
No, I haven't. I thought I had. I've
only seen the Taco Bell version. Which actually works now, because we have 29 Taco Bell restaurants in the UK now.
Do we? I can't think of a single one. And I live in London.
No, there's only one in London, which is in Hammersmith. I think in the arcade by the tube station. You can get a Taco Bell there.
We could have gone there that night when we ate our McDonald's drunk on the common there.
No, we didn't. I don't remember that.
No, that was Shepherd's Bush, wasn't it? Wrong place.
Yep.
Also, has anyone eaten a Taco Bell?
No.
I don't know what it tastes like. It seems to have quite a bad reputation.
It's one of those restaurants that I've never had one, but I got told that myth, or it might not be a myth, but I'm being very careful because I know their legal department are huge fans of the show. Someone told me the quality of the meat that they use in the Taco Bell is on the same scale of meat quality as dog food and cat food.
Okay.
But I don't know if it's true. It could be it sounds like one of those rumors, like, you know, the pus-filled boil in the KFC that burst when someone bit into it and they thought it was mayonnaise, but it was actually just fluid from inside a
boiled
chicken.
You know,
chicken was so low quality.
You make too much spit just before you throw up. That's just happened to me. That's
and
disgusting.
I would like to officially distance myself from Alex Zane's comments about Taco Bell. For the record. I don't know if you guys watched a lot of MTV at this time when this movie came out, but I found it really took me out of the movie, Dennis Leary showing up as Edgar Friend, but just playing Dennis Leary. Because he was doing exactly the same shtick. It was his No Cure for Cancer stand-up routine that then got turned into a bunch of MTV adverts. And he was sort of the rock and roll comedian for a couple of years there. And they just literally bring him out to do that shtick. And it feels like to me today, it'd be like bringing out Michael McIntyre and getting him to do his Live at the Apollo stuff halfway through a film. Like, it just completely takes me out of it.
It doesn't work.
It's not that good, yeah.
It doesn't work because it immediately it's not how people talk. It's how people do stand-up.
Yeah.
But I think it's a Joel Silver thing. So obviously Joel Silver produced this, didn't he? And he also produced another movie where he's got a young comedian in to do exactly the same thing. And that's Lethal Weapon 4. When Chris Rock turns up in Lethal Weapon 4, he's doing that same thing where Joel Silver's gone, just do some of your fucking great material here, man. And it's your moment to just do your stuff. And it sits as awkwardly in that as Dennis Leary does here because he's just doing his routine.
Mm, very strange. But I guess if you're Joel Silver, you're tapping into that MTV market and it's all about, you know, making as much money that opening weekend as possible. So I'm sure that was on his mind.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, I'm sort of racing towards the end here a bit because I can't remember anything else that happens. There's a bit where we're getting to the final showdown between John Spartan and Simon Phoenix, and inexplicably, Sandra Bullock is not allowed along for the ride for this bit, even though she's been a really handy sidekick and she's got her cute little malapropisms where she sort of muddles up her 90s phrases. And as I've mentioned, she's basically single-handedly holding these scenes together. But Sylvester Stallone just knocks her out for some reason and she's not allowed into the final showdown and she's unconscious. And then we do get the final fight between the two, Simon Phoenix and John Spartan, and it ends brilliantly because Wesley Snipes gets his head frozen and then Sylvester Stallone smashes the shit out of it, and it's fun and excellent.
That's the only bit I really remembered from my last viewing of this movie when I was a teenager, thinking that's a really cool death. It's the way the crystallized blood explodes. If you've ever seen the 10th Friday the 13th movie, Jason X, there's another great liquid nitrogen death in that with blood crystals, and that's really good too.
I wrote down, it shatters into tiny Terminator pieces.
That's nice. And there is a bit of, there's a sort of philosophical sign-off at the end, which is meant to sum up the film, and it does do a good job of it, where I can't remember who exactly Sylvester Stallone is talking to. He's talking to Dennis Leary to say, you need to be a bit cleaner. So Dennis Leary represents the resistance or the sort of anti this movement, whatever it is. And then he says to... I don't know if he says it to Sandra Bullock, I can't remember. He's like, but you need to get a little dirty and then we'll meet in the middle, is basically what he's saying. So I haven't figured it out. I can't say who's right, who's wrong, which is the best way to live, but somewhere in the middle, we'll all probably get along nicely, kind of thing.
And then to add insult to injury regarding Sandra Bullock being knocked out for the climax, she actually thanks him for rendering her unconscious.
Oh, God. I just can't. Thank you for doing that. Oh, it must have been like ashes in her mouth.
It's one of her less appealing lines as well after they kiss at the very end. And she goes, are all fluid transfer experiences like this? But she does have some... I wrote down what you said earlier, which is that she is so good in this and provides literally all the laughs.
Yeah.
Which Sylvester Stallone then tramples over with his funny comeback, which they just don't work. But her lines like, you really licked his ass. Brilliant. Sylvester Stallone. And she doesn't trample over that one because like, it's kicked his ass. And then she goes, let's go blow this guy. Which is a stretch when he goes, blow this guy up. And you're like, okay.
Just work with her. Do you know what I mean? She's bringing it to you. She'll pass it. You score. It's easy.
Lovely.
Yeah, that's it. That's it from me. Is there any other, any facts that you want to repeat back to me, etc.?
I think it's the only movie... in which Jeffrey Dahmer gets a really nice gets a compliment where Wesley Snipes is looking at all the people he could unfreeze. He's like, Jeffrey Dahmer, I love that guy.
Oh, that's not true. What about, even though I've seen it with Chris, I always forget what it's called, Russell Crowe.
Virtuosity.
Thank you. Jeffrey Dahmer, I think, gets a mention in Virtuosity.
we could touch upon all the stuff that the film predicted, though. Daniel Waters, actually, Vulture, the website Vulture, interviewed him just a couple of weeks ago because people have been talking about it again in the time of coronavirus in terms of greeting, high-fiving, you know, trying to have intercourse and things without touching each other, and just asking him how he came up with all this stuff. And he said that he wasn't really being that clever. He said a lot of this stuff was on everyone's horizon, but you've got a lot of stuff like the self-driving cars. You've got the CCTV, everywhere monitoring everyone, speech being heavily regulated. I guess on social media, you could see that. You've got the joke about Arnold Schwarzenegger going into politics.
So weird.
Yeah, I mean, it probably wasn't that far-fetched because as soon as he married a Kennedy into the Kennedy family, people said, is he going to try and run for president? But, yeah.
And it was around this time he was about to become governor of California at this point, and I think
10 years before, as well. 10 years later, he became.
Was it 10?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But had they changed some legislation or something? I can't remember.
No, the talk was that you can't become president of America unless you're born on American soil. And the thinking is that one day someone will have the constitution changed so that they can run for president. And Schwarzenegger was, you know, talked about as being maybe that person. But the other thing is Zoom style meetings, which obviously we're all having right now. That is very much in this film, except each person has a little stand that they're on screen.
It's so wasteful,
which I would really like for this podcast.
Just have little, heads in stands.
Did you mention the fact that they don't touch each other as well when they greet?
Yes.
And
yeah, Sandra, you must have missed that bit, but yeah, mentioned it twice. But we could be greeting each other like this film in the not too distant future, which is a weird thing to think about.
I'm going to grab both of you. I really am. I'm
you
excited
have to
about
get
it.
Consent. You have to get consent, Vicky. I keep telling you.
For the last time.
I mean,
the only thing.
Go on, Alex.
Go on. No, I was just saying the only thing that I think is really nice in this movie that we haven't touched on is where they listen to, or maybe we have touched on it, and I was just not listening again. Was where they listen to a radio station that just plays out advertising jingles.
Oh, yeah.
I think like that's just great, like because they are really catchy. And then when they double down on the joke, when they go to the like high class Taco Bell, and the guy on the piano singing the Jolly Green Giant advert.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's nice.
It is kind of weird that he asks about his wife and daughter initially, finds out his daughter is alive, but then never tries to track her down. It seems a bit odd. They did actually shoot a scene. They had an actress cast as his daughter, who is actually older than him in the movie because of the time jump. But apparently that it cut the movie dead, so Joel Silver made them cut it out. So... but it does feel like it's left hanging a bit, where the finale should be maybe him being reunited with his daughter rather than forcing a kiss upon Sandra Bullock.
But then there's all the arguments about, is Sandra Bullock his daughter? Because that would explain... No, that doesn't make much sense chronologically, but she's got this weird love for the 90s that no one can... It makes no sense. So does that come from this dad that she lost in the 90s, maybe?
That would work much better. And considering there's no chemistry between the two of them.
Yeah, why not just do that instead?
You just figure out doing that sex scene with someone else. But, Daniel Waters, before this announcement of a potential sequel, he did say that if a sequel, I think he was half joking here, but he said if a sequel did happen, I wouldn't even need to show action in the trailer. Just a teaser of Stallone walking into a stall. He sees the three seashells, turns to the camera and says, do you want to find out or what?
So shall we do the bits? Is there anything else anyone would like to add?
No, all good at my end. Let's do it.
Okay. Chris, what was your best scene?
I liked it when Sylvester Stallone kicked off Wesley Snipes' head.
Alex, what's your best scene?
It's the bit in the cryo prison where Sylvester Stallone kicks off Wesley Snipes' head. Yeah. But seriously, that bit is great. And it's like just, it's a good death. I do have a couple of problems with it. There's a bit where Wesley Snipes traps him with the crane and then goes, let's try a little bit of target practice. And you're like, yeah, but you actually should, because like you've shot at him and missed him about seven times in this film. There have been scenes where you've been shooting at him and he's been standing in front of you and somehow he's had time to go, uh-oh, they're shooting at me, and hide behind cover after you fired the bullet. So that was annoying. And also, I do think at the end, although he lives up to his name of Demolition Man, we get the promise for the premise and destroys the cryo prison. You got to hope there are no more innocent cops that were frozen in there hoping to be defrosted, because they're all dead. Everyone's dead. All of them. The people who were going to be woken up. There's a guy in there for parking tickets. He's never going to see the light of day.
I agree with you both. It's the freezing, smashing head bit is the best bit. What is your MVW, Chris?
I am going to go for Wesley Snipes. As great as Sandra Bullock is, she grounds the film. I think he is what sort of elevates it, makes it really good fun. He's kind of playing that agent of chaos before, you know, we saw all these other jokers post-Nicholson. It feels like a very Joker-like performance, and I think he's great in it, and I love the fact that the film even predicts that Wesley Snipes will go to prison.
What about you, Alex?
I've got Snipes as well. I thought he was great. I just loved him in it. I like the fact that they've gone, just have a laugh with this, improvise, and you can tell he's sort of thrown a few lines here and there.
which is all fine. The only bit that's sort of, you're sort of like, oh, come on, is when he's in the museum and he just sees that Chinese couple looking at an exhibit and he goes, oh, ha, 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 ya, 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 and you're like, oh, come on. How did that make it in? Yeah. I was like, that's a, you know, this isn't live. Cut it.
Yeah, you can make choices. It's fine. Yeah, that's not good. Obviously, mine is Sandra. There's just no, and there's no, I will brook no argument about that. She's undisputably the best thing in it. Okay, so what change, what one change would you make, Chris?
Well, as Sandra Bullock wasn't that good in the film, maybe Laurie Petty.
You dare. How dare you?
Well, they should definitely have a scene, a post-credit scene where we see Stallone actually wiping his ass. I mean, come on, you've got to pay that off. No, let's have a sequel where we actually see the franchise wars. I love the sound of that.
Oh, wow, that's a brilliant idea.
So in the film, they talk about the fact that Taco Bell won the franchise wars, and that's why every restaurant is now a Taco Bell, which means in the real world that they're the food company that paid the film studio the most money to be included. But I think that's a really interesting idea.
That's the thing. How did they win it? Was it urban warfare, hand-to-hand combat? Did they take it to the streets, or was it corporate?
Poisoning.
Yes!
Poisoning another company's food product.
You'd have a great action scene where Ronald McDonald squares off with Colonel Sanders.
That's a brilliant idea.
Thank you.
Write that down. What change would you make, Alex?
Apologies to fans of The Police or Sting, but I was actually in a pain, like a sort of, it was a mental torture when the song Demolition Man, not written for the movie, an original piece of work, comes on at the end. It's the most, it's just this wall of ugly sound that was filled my living room.
Do you know who it was written for, Alex?
I couldn't find the remote. Grace Jones?
Yeah, Grace Jones.
Yeah. And I just, it was, I couldn't get to the remote quick enough. It was a really, it left a bad taste in my mouth after an otherwise enjoyable experience with this film.
Do you like It's Probably Me from Lethal Weapon 3 from the year before?
Sing it.
No.
No, well, I was so interested to see what was going to happen.
It's Sting singing in like a fake Jamaican accent, pretty much. And I am not, not doing that on air.
Oh, no.
Can we go back to bad mouthing major corporate food brands as a way of cleaning this show up?
My change would be just back to Sandra, just for one second. She should be embarrassed about her love for the 90s. It should be a secret. Her office should not be decorated with Red Hot Chili Peppers posters and whatever. And Sylvester Stallone should give her the confidence to get it right and to be proud of her love for the 90s and all the rest of it. He doesn't knock her out because, obviously. And then she saves all her 90s stuff till right to the end and she recreates a famous scene, probably from Lethal Weapon, and saves the day in the fight using her 90s powers.
100%. Love it.
It's a great idea. All right, good. I'm done.
Excellent.
Well, it's... I mean, I don't want to remove the mystery and intrigue, but I think we know what the verdict's going to be. Here's the verdict.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
All right, so I picked the films. So, Alex, why don't you go first?
Thanks very much, Chris. Not a very tough one for me this week. This was my first watch of Universal Soldier. Didn't know what I was supposed to take from it, or indeed what anyone's supposed to take from it. It was, I'm a bit perplexed by its popularity on any level. I guess I do love that it still keeps keeping on and delivers sequels 25 years later that are better than the original. I didn't see them. I saw the original. For me, Demolition Man, hands down. I will say I didn't enjoy it as much as I did when I was a kid because it's a freaking mess. but I do love visiting future worlds more than I enjoy sci-fi set in the present day. And San Angelinas is a great bit of world building. So, yeah, Demolition Man.
Vicky.
Universe. Kidding. Demolition Man. Without explanation, because we've been at this. I think you know why. So just Demolition Man.
Oh, should I even, Chris? Should I even things up?
No, I think you should be honest.
Well, I mean, if it's an action movie, which these two are, it takes 90 minutes for Dolph and Van Damme to square off in Universal Soldier, whereas in Demolition Man, Stallone and Snipes have battled twice in the first half of the movie. So just on that, I give it Demolition Man. But it's more than an action sci-fi romp, Demolition Man. It's a goddamn prophecy. And it's better in every way, shape, and form. So it's 3-3, Demolition Man this week.
Bang! Be well. Demolition Man is our winner this week. I think we may have seen it coming without any prophecies of our own, but it is the winner. Demolition Man bests Universal Soldier.
We also have a draw. Because I was counting up the amount of profanity you both did during the course of these podcasts to see who owes the most credits. And you've tied. I thought Vicky would take this by some swear word, but you've both
Thank
done.
You,
I mean, as much as I was paying attention to this, you've just done 8 swears each.
It's not a lot, is it? Actually?
So you
but
both,
I suppose that's 16, good. So it's quite, yeah.
You both okay. owe 8 well, credits.
I thought I'd smash that. I'm quite disappointed.
There's always next week, you dick.
Oh my God, Alex has just pulled away.
Right then, let's look ahead to next week. Victoria, you gave us a clue earlier in the week. Remind us of what the clue was.
The clue was living on borrowed time.
Chris, do you want to have a guess off the back of that clue along with me, or shall we grab another clue?
Ooh. I don't have another clue to give you.
Excellent.
Living on borrowed time. Terminator?
No.
All right.
Wait, living on borrowed time. So it's someone who... What, give us a year for one of the movies or both of the movies.
2001 for one of them.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I think the other one's 99. I can't remember.
Okay. Living on borrowed time. Give us an actor. Come on. Give us an actor in one of them.
Painful. Should I just tell you?
Yeah, just tell
yeah, this is... Should I just tell you? Should I just give you the films?
Well, give us one of the films and see if we can guess the other using
okay.
sound.
Chris, you are having the others. Do you want to guess yours, Alex? It's pretty fucking obvious.
Yeah, I know what it is. Yeah,
it's not going to be a connection. What's going to be a spoiler, is it?
I mean, it's pretty fucking obvious. I mean, what do you want from me? Wanted a clue? You got a clue? I mean, what do I have to do?
Is it that the director of mine got his job through a friendship with David Fincher?
So, Alex, you're watching The Sixth Sense.
The Sixth Sense. I got it. Yeah, I worked it out. Okay. So, what's the connection? Yeah. Chris, do you want to swap at all? Or are you happy with the others?
Excuse me. When it's my turn, you two just freely swap. When it's not my turn, we never swap. So you're not allowed to swap. Not unless you, Chris, are best friends with M. Night Shyamalan, which you might be. But if you're not, you're not swapping. It's a thoughtful choice.
They were best friends until Chris sat next to him at a screening and, you know, the usual happened.
Yeah. Didn't say thank you for that popcorn.
Told him what he thought of his movies and how he could be better. You got to drop the twist thing, M. Night. Drop the twist thing. All right, I'll do The Sixth Sense then. Chris, you're doing the others. I'm assuming your silence means you don't want to swap.
Not if Vicky doesn't want us to.
I really don't
God,
want to.
Oh, God, fine. Right, all right, I'll do the bloody Sixth Sense again. Ugh, I know what happens in the end. Let's leave it there then. And thank you very much for listening. If you want to hit us up on Twitter to talk about anything, you can. We're always there. Well, Chris and I are always there. Vicky doesn't do it. So that's at ClashPod. or you can email us show@clashpod.com. Also, do subscribe to us and please rate and review us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening. Back on Monday. Bye-bye.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.